You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 7 of Cawley's Call, and it's good to have you all back. Last week's show was probably the biggest show we've ever done, Stu, and we've done a few big ones, haven't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah, well, I tend to have that kind of effect on people. I don't know, I think it was the aftershave or something, was it?
No.
Sauvage by Chris McDior.
Is that it?
Johnny Depp, yeah, he does the aftershave.
Sauvage.
Sauvage.
Is that spell Sauvage?
S-A-U, S-A-U-V-A-G-E.
Oh, yeah, Sauvage.
Sauvage, yeah.
That'd be a good name of a horse or something now.
I'm so bad.
But no, all joking aside, it's good to have you all back, people. It was a very serious conversation and topic, obviously, what we covered last week. Loads of feedback, loads of messages, people contacting us on Twitter, Instagram, social media, and I really appreciate all the feedback and the amount of listens and different things. We are going to come back to stuff like that over the coming weeks. It's very important, we feel, and to give people the platform as well from all different angles. And it wasn't all negative. I had plenty of positive feedbacks about good things that are happening as well with some underage teams and developments and structures, which will all take time as well. But I do want to say thanks. Stewie, we kind of cut it off last week, so I didn't really get your view on just... In terms of the whole debate and conversation, did you feel it was good, it was beneficial, or what did you take from it?
Oh yeah, I was in pure sit back and listen mode last week without a shadow of a doubt, because you know sometimes in this job or any, you know, it's always good to sit back and listen and only speak when you really need to, have you know, when you're going to add something to the conversation. So it was good to listen to the two lads talk. I think it's important that we give, you know, different facets of the game that platform, because a lot of people don't understand those kind of things. And you know, similar to what you were saying, you were getting messages back. I've been getting messages myself, not through Twitter, because I'm not on Twitter, but I get the odd postcard, which I read.
A fax.
Yeah, answers on the postcard. Yeah, I do read them. I've been getting a lot of feedback off the back of some, like, I've been kind of harping on about this. Yeah, I know you have as well, but like, you know, as whenever I get the opportunity, I do like to bring up this, because I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves about it, you know, and sort of we need to tell ourselves that things aren't good. Like, you know, we can get very easily distracted by other things. So the Premier League, or the Grand National, which was great the weekend, for obvious reasons, with Rachel Blackmore, and brilliant story. And you know, maybe the Irish rugby team will win, and you can get distracted away from, you know, yeah, this is all great, lads, but Irish soccer, you know, it's in a really bad way, it needs your help, like, you know. So any opportunity I do get, I try to bring it up without being a complete nag, because if you become a nag and constantly go on about it, people just will stop listening.
Of course.
So yeah, it, you know, the timing was right in the at this moment in time, off the back of the Irish team not doing well, the Stephen Kenny conversation, people are looking at Francis, they're looking everywhere, they're blaming the FAI, they're blaming John Delaney, they're blaming him, you know, they're blaming everything. So they're looking for questions. So it's the time to talk about it, isn't it? Now it'll probably hit a lull again, but I think it's very important that we constantly go back to it, and we try to galvanize ourselves and each other, and we need to continually try to have this conversation. Because for me, Alan, I genuinely think we don't have much money. There ain't an awful lot we can do financially wise, but what we can do is we can try and change our mentality about our approach to it all. You know, there are a lot of things a lot of clubs have achieved in this league with very little money, you know. So there are things we can start to do and try to change the mindset. You know, we're going through a particular period at the moment where we're living in a pandemic. You can't travel abroad, you can't travel anywhere, like, you know. So I felt there was an opportunity now to try and convince those people, to convince those Irish soccer loving, the Irish soccer loving population, to maybe just have a little think about, you know, that, you know, that team supporting England and all. Do you really
just ask yourself the
question?
Is
it just
a
habit,
or
is it why? You know, and if they can turn around to me and say, do you know what? I love supporting my, you know, I get everything back. I go over with family. I go, great.
Yeah, good luck to them.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
But I'm guarantee you, there's a percentage, and in my opinion, it's a quite a high, considerable percentage of people that might just go, do you know what? You're right.
Mm.
I don't really know why I do that. Like, so I will give it a go. I'll go down to Bowes. I'll go down to Shells. I'll go to Sligo. I'll go to Finn Harps. And I'll give it a go and I'll see if it can be part of something. So that's really what we're trying to get at, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well said. And that's the thing as well about it last week. I know, as I said, some people might kind of think it was, not that it was negative, it was just important conversation to have. But we're very positive as well and we're upbeat about what you can do in the future and all that kind of stuff. And it takes time. And as I said, when we do come back to those kind of conversations, we will have people in giving us their messages on what they're trying to do in the league and kind of very credible people as well. So all that's to look forward to. But we are going to get back to the normal, I suppose. The weekend's football, we're going to look back on the games. I was in the showgrounds. That was probably the biggest game of the weekend, Stu. I was down the showgrounds covering the game. Sligo Rovers won, Shamrock Rovers won. I'll give you my view after this, but what did you think?
I'll tell you what. I'm just trying to think now. The Sligo goal. It was
Manus.
Manus, yeah. Sorry. So that's a kick in the nuts, isn't it? Really, like, you know. But the response from Shamrock Rovers.
And it's the second time because we
second
were
time
in,
against
we were
Pats. You've got to hand it to them, Alan. They've got something, like, you know. And they're not Rovers in second tour gear at the moment. They're not at it, like, you know. They're only going to get better and better. For a couple of reasons, because they're trying to make up for the loss of some extremely good players, as we all know, in Jack Byrne and Aaron McNiff. So they're bringing through, you know, you can see the likes of Mandrew, Dylan Watts starting to kind of maybe fill in those roles. It take time. But the other reason is some of our big clubs just aren't at it. Like, you know, like Shamrock Rovers are kind of able to get away with not being at their best at the moment, which is unfortunate. But they're only doing their job. They've responded well to going down to what was a poor mistake, man, I have to say. But you got to give credit to Sligo. They're starting to believe a little bit now, aren't they? Really, you know, and it's that's what's a huge part of anything, Alan, is a good start and the confidence it can breed in a team is in this league. Can be everything.
Absolutely, yeah. And even off the pitch as well, Stu. I went down to the showgrounds, obviously to cover the game, but I've been in the showgrounds how many times now? And even last year, I never felt I was never confident in the team anyway, and I was quite critical of them. I have been for the last couple of years, just in terms of, I think I always felt there was more, loads more could have been done and to come out of that team and squad. The recruitment, the signing of players, it was never anywhere near the level I expected it to be, or it should have been. This year, they've gone out and signed better players, better quality players, they have a better looking squad, and all of a sudden the lift it's given the place to. I went to the showgrounds, you know, and you're chatting to people around. Obviously, there's not many, we know that with the fans, but just I'm talking about maybe committee members or people around, you just get a feel about the place that all of a sudden, as you said, they're believing that something might be happening here. We have the makings of a really good team. So I was really interested to see how the team would perform against Shamrock Rovers, as you say, the champions, the best team in the league. It would have been a really good test and a good gauge just to see where they were at. And Stu had passed every test. They were very, very good, the team, Sligo Rovers. McGinty in the goals was very, very good. Pulled off a great save earlier on. Gary Buckley and John Mann. John Mann was brilliant on the night. Absolutely brilliant. Buckley beside him. Just that calm assurance. You know yourself from playing centre midfield. You go back playing centre half. You see everything in front of you. You read it really well. And he has all that. And I just feel there's a good spine of the team. Bulger and Moore in front of them were excellent. Done all that donkey work and work that goes unnoticed a lot of the times, but Greg Bulger's been a huge addition. And then up front, obviously he wasn't young Johnny Kenny's night, he came off at half time, but even with Parks and Figuera. So I just think they have a far better looking team and a better look about them, and as you says, there's huge confidence there with the start that they've had. And looking at Shamrock Rovers, I was very disappointed with Bradley's interview after the match. He basically came out, I don't know if you've seen it, but he basically came out and says we had enough chances to win two games. And I was kind of thinking, Stephen, you really didn't. Like, if you look back at the game, You had the odd chance, maybe there was a one in the second half Aaron Green could have put away, but a brilliant tackle by Jordan Gibson. But it was very, very even, the match. In the second half, I would probably say Shamrock Rovers were probably edged it in the second half. Started the second half very well, were well on top. The goal probably did come against the run of play from Sligo's point of view. But there wasn't much between the teams at all, Stu. A draw was a fair result, I felt. He came out basically trying to say that they deserved to win, had enough chance to win two games. I can't agree with that at all. A draw, in my opinion, was a very fair result.
Yeah, and nor can you be surprised because, you know, this result last year, you might have been surprised that maybe Shamrock Rovers didn't go and dominate, but Sligo are a different team this year, like, you know, and they've started the season extremely well. You'd have to look at this year. You know, let's compare last year to this year. Okay, last year was a shambles. You know, for obvious reasons. There was a whole season started, then it stopped. You know, and then it was gone for a couple of months, and there was all sorts of, you know, sort of things going on about financial packages. We were in the midst of the pandemic. You know, some teams were training somewhere, and some were paying players somewhere, and so it was a mess. You know, there wasn't the regular build up to a season, the normal pre-season. You know, you go through your 6 or 7 weeks, you get your squad ready. That didn't happen last year. It was all out the door, like, you know. So this year, everyone's on a level playing field. They're coming into the season. They're knowing it's starting at the start of the season, so they've all gone through normal pre-seasons, what you would call the regular build up to a league season. And we can now see, you know, you always stand back at the first game, couple of games, you take a little step back and you have a look and you see how it starts to kind of develop. Now we're starting to see it, like, you know. Sligo going to be up there, simple as that, because of the standards they've set for themselves. You know, good squad, they all look fit, good pre-season underneath them, signed well, like everything you're just saying there. But the most important thing, they're getting results, and they've got confidence, and now it's starting to really build. So they put themselves now in a situation where they're expected to go on really, really, you know, either.
No, I don't think they can
win
the league.
Yeah, you won't challenge yet. You know, you're not.
But I think, looking at, as you says, the makeup of the teams and the way I suppose how competitive is this year, and I feel, and I've said this numerous times, and even I think it's been borne out so far. Shamrock Rovers have come back to the pack.
Yeah.
Yes, last year they were stretching away, in my view, and had they kept Jack Burnhamack, and if they would, it would have been a cakewalk again this year for them. I felt, looking at them this year, they've definitely come back, but I still think they're the team to beat. Looking at them Saturday night, as you says, they're not firing on all cylinders, but they're still a very good team, a very strong team, and it will be the team to be come the end of the season. I've no doubt about that. Yeah. They'll be up there. But looking at Sligo Rovers, I think they should be nailed on trying to get Europe again this year.
Oh yeah, oh well, completely. We're talking top four. But they shouldn't look what Bowes achieved last year. Like, you know, look what Leicester did a couple of years ago.
Oh no, that's not to say they shouldn't aim for that.
And I know you're not saying that, but
I'm just, what I'm saying is, I just don't think that they'll win the league, but I think they'll be definitely up there or thereabouts, whatever.
We need Sligo to push Shamrock Rovers now, because Dundalk and Bowes aren't doing it at the moment.
And St. Pat's.
And we need Pat's to do it, yeah, for obvious reasons. And we'll come to Pat's in a minute because there's a like for like here between Pat's and Sligo. You know, I think there's very, very similar attributes. Good off season, signed well, signed in the proper positions. Good pre season. It's all gone
well. They're very similar.
No huge injury worries. In fact, I don't think anybody's come into the season with huge injury worries.
You know, Pats have it. We'll come to Pats, but you know, and you're bang on, Stu, when you say the similarities between the two. That they're part of that chasing pack, but the off seasons that they've had in terms of bringing in players and the start is very similar that both of them have. But looking at them, and it's something as well, obviously, we as you say, we'll come to Pats, but you look at Sligo at the moment and Pats, and from the games that they've played already, you know what the big thing that they have, both of them, along with all the other similarities outside of the games? Continuity in team selection. Liam Buckley has picked the same team. I think he made one change last week. Cawley came in for Figueira and Longford. The weekend, I think he brought Figueira back in for Cawley. But he's literally had 9 or 10 of the 11 every week. Stephen O'Donnell, the exact same. And the difference that makes, I feel, as well, to a team.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, I think coaches might have been, well, football in general actually might have been a little bit guilty in times gone past, let's say the last 10, 15 years, of falling into this whole, you know, rotation system, and you have to rest players, and you don't have to rest players. You know, not in this league. It's bullshit. Well, you play your best players when they're fit and ready to go.
If Pat said to you, I'm resting you Friday night, Stuart, because I know you're doing a concert on Saturday night. What would Pat be told?
He just wouldn't. He wouldn't do
no,
it.
Pat, I know. Pat, of all the people, Pat,
I got rested once
every week.
I got rested once.
There'd be no rotation with Pat.
I'll tell you what happened. This was the 2003 season. Yeah.
League game.
Yeah. I had broke my ankle at the end of the 2002 season, right? This is the league that Bowes won. Bobby Ryan got a header in Talca Park, and the shortened season, Stephen Kenny was the manager. I broke my ankle in the Derry game just before that game, and I did a fitness test with Wes, and he was grand, and I was gone. The long story short, I had a broken bone in my ankle. I didn't find out till
you were playing on with it.
I was playing on with it, yeah, and I didn't realise until.
So the night you played out in Belfield, and I was just new to the league, and I ran rings around you.
That was it. Yeah, I was like a car park attendant, just limping after you with the roll of the paper. But
Pat signed me off the back of that game,
and he didn't play for 3 years.
There
was a legal reason for it.
Whitley's on that seat now. I'll have it out with him.
I broke my ankle at the end of the 2002 season. So I went into the 2003 season with a broken ankle in pre-season, and I broke down. I had to stop, and I had to get surgery. And
but did you know it was a broken ankle at the time?
I knew there was something wrong, but it was a long story.
We won't go into that.
Yeah, I knew there was something wrong with me. All right, yeah, but
someone got strung up by this.
Someone got lynched. All right, yeah, I missed the first 3 months of the 2003 season, just getting back fit. And I remember when I don't play, I don't eat. I tend to lose a lot of weight. I drop weight very quickly. I don't go the other way. I go quite extreme. So I was coming back, and I couldn't play for more than 65 minutes.
But go back to that for a moment, right? You don't eat.
So yeah, because I can't burn it off, I don't eat. I go very.
Is that your own choice?
It's just a thing in my head. Like, I have to come back fit. Like, the last thing I need come back. And this is the only long term injury I've ever had in my career.
Because you were a very fit person.
Yeah. So I'd be very, you know, I'd be all action, full of running, all energy. Like, you know, that'd be my training, be the same as matches. So, you know, you're burning calories, you're burning, you know, so, you know, you can eat kind of what you want, like, you know, but when you can't do that, don't eat at all. Just complete. I literally was eating toast and jam, brown toast and jam, and cups of tea and all that. So I came back underweight. I was probably about 4 kilos lighter than what I should have been. So fitness wise, I couldn't, like, 70 minutes would be gone, like, you know, be gone. So Pat would take me off at 70 minutes. It was great to get back. I got back in the middle of the season, just in time as well, because we were starting to kind of struggle a little bit. So I was coming back. So Pat, for the first few weeks, had to play me, and he'd take me off after 70 minutes. I'd be flagging. Like, I'd even put my hand up and go, I'm gone, like, I'm exhausted. But anyway, got that out of the way, and the season it carried on. And then we got towards the end of the season, and I hit another dip in fitness, like, you know. And this is always why pre-seasons are just so important. If you don't get a good pre-season, you're always chasing your tail. You can never get right, like, you know. So I was kind of spiking and dropping. We came towards the end of this. We're coming towards the end of the season, business end of the season. I had hit a lull. I was gone again, like, you know, fitness-wise. Might have been psychologically as well. So Pat dropped me for a game away to Pat's. I remember he pulled me for the game on pitch, told me, listen, I'm not going to play tonight, like, whatever, kind of give you a rest. And I was fucking livid, I really was. But I kind of knew why, I knew it was coming, you know. And we played Pats, didn't play great. We dug out a result, came on for the last 20 minutes and did okay. And then we were going into the following game was the Bowes, playing Bowes away. And Bowes, it was ourselves and Bowes for the league title, like, you know. Bowes were ahead of us. And we had to go to Daly Mount. This is about 3 or 4 games before the end of the season, live on TV. We had to go there and we had to win, you know. So I'm going to that game, going, I'm playing. And I'm chomping at the bit now, and I'm bullying as well. Like, you know, but in training that week, I was...
Was he giving you any indication?
No, no. In training, I was flying. So I needed the kick in the arse as well. It was like a psychological reboot I needed more than anything. Like, you know, I think I'd hit a wall physically, mentally, you know, just with the whole stop start season. But training, flying, and didn't even have to say it to me. So I back in the team for that game. And I scored the winner. So we won 1-0. Beppo's effectively won the league, like, you know. What was the point I was making? What was the whole...
About being dropped, rested.
About, yeah. So it was the. I always looked back at that in my career. Believe it or not, would you believe? So my whole Shell's career, I could see if I wasn't playing well, or if I not if I wasn't playing well, if I wasn't starting well, or if I was, you know, if I had a dip, even a, you know, a 20 minute dip in a game or a bad training day, I would always go back to that incident and said, I'm not fucking getting dropped again.
And you used to carry that, would you?
I used to carry it with me. There was that got me through Michelle's years. And there was another thing that got me through Michelle's years. And that was, Jesus Christ, there must have been, every week I'd say there was a new player coming down every week, coming back from England, more than likely coming back from England, you know, good top player when he was a young schoolboy, coming back from Manchester City, whatever the case may be. And they were always midfielders. Always. And you'd be like, Jesus Christ almighty. Like, you just never had a chance to rest. Like, so you were always.
So when I signed you, you were like, see this little shite.
Not a chance this fella's getting into this.
See this little gobshite now coming down here.
See you.
We will. We're going to have Pat on.
But it was that fear, Al. It was that fear of... Now, it has its downsides, because I would have... I'm reminiscing now. I'm kind of going off on a bit of a tangent, but I would certainly like to have tried more different things as a player when I was at Shells. But I kind of got stuck as in a certain role, and I said, "Look, I'll take it. This is a fantastic club to be. We're winning leagues. We're playing in Europe. I'll take it." But that fear every week, every day, every training session. If I didn't have a good training set, I'd go home in an absolute... I'd be fuming. Fuming. And I'd have to get training the next day. I'd have to be flying to get it out of my system, yeah.
It's really interesting. And especially,
terrible loser as well.
I know we're laughing and joking about it, but I could sense that from you. And that's why I often speak to people, and I know we are going off on a little bit of a tangent, but it's a good tangent, because that dressing room was unreal in terms of the senior pros. I look at lads now, Stu, and obviously we're close to the games and you go to all the games, and I don't know, they're not a patch on that dressing room in terms of the demands that used to be put on lads. And I know times have changed, but I remember there was an incident actually on Saturday night. I remember saying it in the commentary box, and who broke away? Gibson, was it? No, or was it Figuera? Figuera broke away. It was either Figuera or Gibson, but one of them broke away down the right-hand side. There was a break on. But Colm Horgan made an unbelievable run. He must have ran 70 yards, the right full, to overlap. And he, in an unbelievable position, right? And I'm thinking, just slide him in. And obviously cross it, and there's a good chance that someone gets on the end of it. Figuera or whoever it was took the shot.
Should have tore the head off him.
And I remember saying, I said, see, if I was him, if I was Colm Horgan, I would devour him. I'm thinking... Because I played a lot on the right with Chels. Owen Heary, if he ran 70 yards, he'd have time to come and hit me and still run back.
Clear one off the line.
That dressing room, yeah. We are. We're going to do, here's actually, we're talking about things we're going to do a little Chels reunion in a few weeks. So pencil that into the diary. We are, and there's going to be some stories out of that. I've lined up with managers and players and so and so. So it will be a bit of crack. But let's get back to the results, Shoe. One thing Sligo Rovers do have, which I want to touch on, that they didn't have the last few years as well. They're so fit and hungry. They look like a really good group. And really, that's another thing last year I never felt. And with something with Liam's teams, I always felt the demands that he put on them. But listening to his interview down in Waterford, he was really annoyed after the performance. And I remember saying it, I'm delighted to hear that, because he's putting demands on them now, and he was disappointed that they're putting out not a great performance, and he's basically pulling them up on it.
Yeah, well, maybe Liam's changing himself.
I think Liam senses, Stu, he has a good team this year that can do something.
Yeah, and you need the manager sets the tone. You know, the first day pre-season, when you come in, the manager turns around and says, oh, we're going to play great football this year, lads. It's going to be great crack, you know, just pass it there. It sets holiday, a tone, yeah. Like, you know. So when you come in for, say, pre-season, manager turns around, you know, sets the standard, whatever it might be. We finished, you know, we got into Europe last year. We're going to do it again this year. But this year, we're going to make sure that it's not last minute stuff or whatever that we're going to get in proper.
Because it was a fluke last year, I felt. It was a bit of a fluke.
You need that standard, that goal for the team to go for, you know. So, and I'm sure something along those lines were said to the squad this year. And it does all come back to the fact that good pre-season, you know, everything is kind of set in place. There's no confusion over a league starting or stopping or whatever the case may be. So, you know, Sligo are one of the teams that are definitely benefiting from the fact that we've had a kind of a consistent build-up at the start of the season. Other teams are struggling that you wouldn't expect. Mm. But Sligo are certainly making the benefits. Yeah.
Shamrock Rovers, last word on them, Stu. The goalkeeper, I even said it in the commentary box, I'd never criticise him. He's been the best goalkeeper for the last 2 or 3 years. I couldn't believe it. It
was so close to him. It's like he just. I mean, it was just bizarre.
It's hard to explain.
It's very hard to explain.
For such an unbelievable keeper. Yeah. And that's why I wouldn't be critical of him, because last week, the game against Dundalk, he got them the points. He was brilliant. How many games has he bailed them out? Even games when he's not even called into action, they're dominant, and then he'll have to produce a save. He's always there, and he's so reliable and so dependable. So I wouldn't mind that. I do think, as I said, Shamrock Rovers, I still think they're going to be the team to beat. Good substitutions by Bradley, actually. Brought on Gaffney, made a big difference. Got the goal, albeit a deflection. But and they obviously have Lopez to come back, O'Brien. So it was a really good game, the Showgrounds. I felt the draw was a fair result. And now let's move it on. Pats against Derry, Stu. The other team that are top of the league, St. Pat's, have had a brilliant start. You mentioned the similarities there, along with the start that Sligo have, and maybe the pre-season and the off-season bringing players in, and they have had a brilliant start.
Excellent start, yeah. I could tell after 10 minutes, the first game of the season that we covered against Rovers, out in Talla, you're going to the home of the champions. First 10 minutes, let's see what you're made of. And they were excellent. Mm-hmm. And you could tell straight away, these are going to be at it this year. Had a good feeling about Pats, to be fair, in the lead up to the season. Just thought Stevie had signed well. Also, he was getting the opportunity, wasn't he, to get a good, you know, to really maybe get rid of a few that weren't up to it, like, you know. And there were things
put his stamp on things.
Yeah, there were things coming out last year about, you know, disagreements and dressing rooms and all that kind of stuff, and that can as much be down to a player who shouldn't be there for whatever reason as it is a manager. Mm. So he's getting time now, and you can see he's put his own real stamp on it. They look really good to me. Mm. Look really good. I'd say who he's brought in. You look at it. I mean, you know, Barrett and Mountney. You know what you're going to get from them. On top of Benson already being there.
Coughlin looks it.
I mean, I think this move could work wonders for him. Mm. You know, for me, he needs to be a little bit greedier around the box. You know, and I think Stevie might get that into him at the moment. At the moment, now you can see he's definitely become. He's a feeder at the moment, isn't he? And he's, you know, a very good assist rate, and he was involved in the goal, one of the goals the other night as well. But
Benson's had a good start as well, Robbie Benson.
Yeah, but they
obviously comes with that mentality from Dundalk with Stevie as well. That's big.
But the difference for me, and I'll say it, is Forrester.
Oh, Forrester, be
outstanding. He looks like he's chomping at the bit now. Like, you know, hasn't been like that for a couple of years. For a number of reasons, difficult family circumstances, and that's something that he's had to overcome. He looks a different player to me, like, you know, and we all know that lad is serious quality. Mm. Okay,
well, he is the ability best player in the league.
He's serious quality, like, you know. That's like anybody with quality. Well, I mean, what is quality? I mean, in my opinion, quality is, you know, it's not. People will say, "Oh, you're bomber," you know. You're not bomber. He works his bollocks off. Mm. I mean, he probably worked his bollocks off as a kid, doing different things, like, you know, same as what Wes Houlihan did. But when you can add work rate to that, that's when, you know, that's the difference for me. Like, you know, and he's at it, like, you know, and he's rubbing off on everybody else, and they're clicking. You know, I think
the midfield three as well of him, Benson, and young Lennon, I think they complement them so well, Stu. Because as you says, Chris has been labelled as that one that he has that languid style, but classy. And some people, you can misconstrue that sometimes for someone that's lazy, but that's not the case at all this year, because as you says, he's working his balls off. Buddy has the quality in possession, but Lennon does an unbelievable amount of work for him as well beside him.
I just want to come in on Forrest, right? And it's an important point. Like, you know, think about his development as a player, okay? You know, when he was younger at Pats, he was given the rein, wasn't he? He was like, he almost became this player that did special things and did off the cuff things.
Like a flair player. The
flair player, right? But that comes about because of a couple of wonderful goals he scored, right? Now, what can happen as a player is you can fall into that, you can say, yeah, I'm going to be that flair player. And you can't get away with that forever. You can't get away with that forever. And at some stage as a player, you have to realise, well, I can't just swan around the pitch and hope I might get a volley in top corner and people go, oh, you know, Chris Forrester again, like, you know. Like,
when he went to Peterborough that time, they changed his position and he played a game, actually. I remember it.
He was a sitting midfielder.
And he was phenomenal because of his passing range and his ability.
And this would be the game Martin Keown maybe was raving about. It was an FA Cup game, wasn't it? Yeah. So we've got that ability, like, you know. But the point I'm trying to get around to is that, you know, players need to develop. You can't get away with that all the time, like, you know, because teams read you. Mm. They know, well, there's Forrester, he's going to do that. So just stand off and get tight, whatever. Like, so you have to change. And maybe he struggled a little bit with that for a couple of years. And, you know, what do I do now? Do I become a sitting midfielder? I don't want to be a sitting midfielder. I think I still have the legs to get forward. And he had to work out in his head where he needed to be, like, you know, and where he needed to get to. But the one thing you do when you're struggling to kind of, when you're a little bit confused about what kind of player you are at this moment, so the one thing you do is you just work hard. Mm. You know, and it'll solve itself. And to me, that's it. He's just like, it's the pennies drop with him.
I think as well, looking at him, and no disrespect to what was there last year, the year before, but he knows there's good players around him now as well, Stu. And he's a bit turned on by it, probably. He's probably looking at it thinking, we can do something now. Where he's probably looking at the team last year. And I know sometimes you say, well, he should be self-motivated anyway. And I get that. But he's probably looking now feeling as though there's a few players here on the same page as me now.
And to add to that, right, and I don't know this at all, but I'm going to guess that he mightn't have bought into Stevie.
Possibly
initially.
At the start, yeah.
You know, he might be...
They had to build up their relationship. Yeah,
exactly. And Stevie's probably coming in with all these kind of standards, you know, having been at Dundalk, and Chris probably like, oh, you know, I mean... Really?
Yeah.
You know, but maybe he said, you know what, yeah. And see, once you start getting the benefits of that stuff, you don't want to go back. Never want to go back at all. Like, you know, once you start reaping the benefits for fitness and diet and, you know, just standards, just, you know, turn up, you know, I mean, training starts at, you know, if training starts at 10:30, you know, be there at 9:30,
yeah.
You know, don't,
yeah.
Or be there at 9 o'clock in the gym or whatever. Don't be just going wanting, like, you know, Joseph and Don.
Joseph trains at 10:30, okay.
So he'll be late for his own funeral.
25 to 11, Joseph will be swollen.
But to be fair to him, he had the ability to let him away with it.
But no, you're right. And Pats do look very strong. Derry, on the other hand, Stu, dreadful start.
Oh, it's, Friday could be it for Decky.
They're playing Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night.
Oh, I don't need to, Decky doesn't need to hear that. But the only thing, this is what I'll say about Derry. Look at the two goals the other night against Pats, and look at the two goals against Longford, first game of the season. And what you'll see is Longford didn't open them up through any quality play. Pats didn't really open up Derry the other night through any quality play, just good play. Derry had numbers back, players in position, just all too passive. Just all, they're watching, no one's going and closing down, really going, you know, proper defending, get in there, get a tackle in, get cover on. It's just all very passive and too easy, like, you know. So something, they almost look to me, Derry, like they've gone through something in pre-season where they're trying to change the shape of their team, and the players just don't quite get it yet. Mm. They don't know,
which sometimes can be,
which can happen.
Yeah, you can take time,
but his budget's
been cut as well up
his
there.
Budget, well, after being increased last year, but the go to Alan, as I always, you just burst your bollocks.
Yeah.
Just if you're not playing well, just get in people's faces until it sorts itself out. So that's where they're at the moment.
They've lost three. He's obviously under pressure, as we said. I felt more so at you were laughing at me tonight. We had Kenny here, and I was saying it wasn't that I felt he was under pressure after one game. It was more so coming off the back of a disappointing season that last year. I felt they just had to get off to a good start this year. So this pressure has mounted because of last season as well. And here we find ourselves three games in to having won a game, the worst possible start. the champions coming to town tomorrow night. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? You can look at it both ways. It could be the worst thing in the world because they could get spanked, or it could be the game that actually kickstarts their season because they're all up for it.
It could be. And I mean, I don't know whether he's looking at Friday night, you know, the two games. If he can get a result out tomorrow, get a point out of it, and maybe a win on Friday, then it's all over, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if it goes, just wait, they're in trouble. And by the way, I think Drogheda will quite like playing on in the big pitch up in Derry.
Full of energy,
and they're kind of in a good place at the moment as well.
Yeah, so obviously that's the game that we're going to come on to next. We're covering that, Stu, in the Brandywell on Friday night, Derry against Drogheda. It's live on the box. Drogheda had a brilliant start, Stu, 4-0 against Longford. Finally, my prediction of Longford struggling has come off, but I didn't think they'd struggle so badly against Drogheda, to be honest, because that's a team that got promoted with themselves last year, and they did have a good start. Funny, I met Dara Doyle in the park last week, and I said to him, Dara, I've you tipped to go down everywhere. And he says, you keep tipping us to go down. But no, we had a bit of a chat, and he says, look, he was delighted with the start that they've had, because they did have a good start, but that's two defeats back to back now, and a heavy one at home against Rodas.
And more so, if you look at the game again, look at the goals, you can sense that naivety in this Longford team now, that they really got
The goals were poor.
I mean, defensively, the goals were very poor. I mean, from a Longford point of view, the first goal was a very scrappy goal. Yeah. Keeper's kind of trying to grab one off the line, and it's scrappy. The second goal, for me, is I don't know what the keeper's thinking. I mean, I think he's thinking the cross is going to come right across everybody, and he's wandered away from his natural central position, and it's a tap in really, but I have to point back to the build-up to the goal itself, which was a wonderful bit of interchange play, lovely 1-2, very close, you know, a little triangle stuff, one touch between James Brown.
Bow!
James Brown. And Mark Doyle, is it? And Doyle, and it was a very good build-up to the goal. So it was good. I mean, it's good play from Drogheda, standard stuff, you know, and then you look at the third goal, it's a break down the left hand side, cross into the box, and the guy's left, the centre half's left 1v1, and he's just done.
Yeah, they'll be disappointed.
It's very passive, it's very, you know, it's a little bit similar to what we're kind of saying about Derry. No one, you know,
taking control of the situation.
No one really kind of, going and winning balls and just, you know, the scrappy stuff. Sometimes you just got to do the scrappy stuff. Like,
absolutely.
You know,
you have to, more so, Longford more so than anyone else, because what they lack in quality. And they do lack a lot of quality because of obviously where they come, which is fine, where they've come from. So they, more than any other team in the league, have to be even better at that kind of scrappy, dirty, ugly stuff type thing. And I know that's a standard and a basic standard for all the teams, but more so for them because they do lack quality.
So yeah, and you're dead right. And the fact that you've actually just said the quality thing there has kind of reminded me of something as well. Like, you know, you can forgive them maybe for having a good start. They're at home to Drogheda. They might say, "Well, look, you know,
we've arrived."
Well, in a nice way. I'm not saying that at all, but like it's a natural thing that can happen to a squad. So maybe we can go and play here and we get a result out of this, like, you know, and bang, 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 they're caught, you know, and then it's a reminder to them we're not good enough,
yeah,
to drop our standards at all,
yeah,
you know, and then sometimes and Dardo, it could be a benefit to him if he gets a good response from his team, say, you know what. You're right. Listen, we can't drop our standards. We just have to every week, just keep doing what we're doing, and that can be hard for a team. Mm. It can be very hard for a manager who knows he's got a good bunch around them, but he knows they're not good enough to go and take on teams. So he's trying to instill a mentality in them that we have to play this way.
Yeah, he'll know their limitations.
Yeah.
And but the problem, as you say, is getting that message across
to the players.
But then the players think, well, I'm better than
him.
Oh,
yeah. it's a natural thing.
Yeah,
you know, players just think,
they'll need a good response because they're playing Shamrock Rovers in Tala on Saturday night. So they'll want a hell of a response. On Drogheda, though, Stu, one of your former teams, they've had a brilliant start. Tim Clancy and Kevin, obviously up there, Kevin Doherty, and they've been building towards this over the last three or four seasons that they've been there, obviously going very close in the first couple of years, then getting promoted, and they've acquitted themselves really, really well. It's helped, I felt, the recruitment in the off season. They brought in a bit of experience, some good players, but it's the players that have always been there that have obviously produced the goods. And there's a young lad there scored two at the weekend, and I remember Kevin telling me all about this young lad. He was a big fan of him, Mark Doyle. And I watched him a couple of games with Drogheda in the first division, and he looked very, very lively. They did well to hold on to him because I think there was a bit of interest from elsewhere as well. But it's good to see him doing well, a young player like that as well, and he scored two at the weekend.
Yeah, it took his goal as well. I mean, look, it's always good when you've got a goal scorer. I mean, when you've got a goal scorer on your team, is putting the ball in the back of the net. Like, and even if it's the scrappy ones, because you know, it can just as easy go the other way when you're not putting the ball in the back of the net and it's getting frustrating. So to have somebody doing that is, I suppose, it's the icing on the cake for them, because they're playing well at the moment. They've
7 points out of 12.
They've signed very well.
And to be fair to them, Stu, the game that they dropped the points in against Pats, they deserved the point, I felt, and it was the late goal that cost them. So really good start for Drogheda. They're in front of the cameras on Friday night and we're looking forward to that. Now, the other big story in Louth, Stu, and it's a big story at the moment, and it's a bit of a mess. It's an absolute mess. Dundalk getting beat by Bohemians again, and the stuff that's going on in terms of off the pitch and the rumours, and I listened to a couple of interviews after the match, with one with Shane Keegan, and questions about Filippo and who's the manager and all this kind of stuff coming back. There's substitutions, and I'm looking at the manager, who I think is the manager, in the stand roaring down to Shane Keegan. He's roaring up to it. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it is a mess. Yeah, but sure, it was only going to go this way, Alan. Unless Dundalk were thumping teams and taking everybody's focus off the mess that's going on, this was always going to happen, and it's happened, you know. And they're in real trouble, you know. I mean, when you think back to the opportunity that he's been given. You know, Filippo, hell of a job for him to get.
Unreal.
Hell of a job for him to get. Like,
well,
you know,
the question marks for me were always there with him because of his back. No disrespect to him, we said this last year.
No,
because of his background, the question marks were only natural. When he came in, he did okay, but his league form was dreadful. What's papered over the cracks there has been the Europa League stuff, and obviously they went on to win the cup. But the cup, you can win a couple of isolated matches. The league thing is where I would judge it at week to week. And here we are in the new season, and I think he's 3 wins out of 13 in the league. Like,
well,
it's chronic.
That's the thing, you know. We're talking about since he's gone in it was early September, mid September. Really, I seen no difference in Dundalk when he went in there. No lift. Like, you know, they just, like you say, they won the cup. Deservedly won the cup, to be fair. But, you know, they were at a level where it was really only going to be between themselves and Rovers, maybe Bowers.
Yeah, because and to be fair, no taking away from him, he's the manager that'll be remembered. But, Stu, the cup took care of itself. That game, a cup final, the players could have went out and managed themselves in that match.
Oh, yeah, and that's the level that Dundalk were at, like, you know, that the players were at. Now, they've come back, they've come into this season, and it's been a mess.
It's a shambles.
It's been a shambles. It's been a mess. And I've been here before, Alan. It doesn't go away. You can't change it. Like, no, there's a problem that has to be solved.
We touched on Pat there, Pat Fenlon, being our manager for a long time, and how good he was. Could you imagine Pat up in the stand roaring down to someone? And
I know. You can't. It just doesn't work. It's as simple as that. Like, you know, everybody loses all sorts of credibility here.
Yeah.
You know, everyone, it's all gone out the door. You know,
if you're a player watching this going on.
Yeah, yeah, and nobody's getting fooled here by any, but, like, you know, players are laughing at this, you know, and the one thing, you know, players they're always looking for an excuse, and if, you know, sometimes you can be galvanized by this, or sometimes it goes the other way. It's gone the other way now, and I don't see this improving at all anywhere. Until something drastic happens, I think they have to be looking at a change. Like, you know, they have to be. They can't keep going like this.
And I think, to be fair to the staff that's there at the moment, it's not like from all the reports that we have heard from in terms of up above and Peak Six and who's looking after them and all that kind of stuff. It's not like you're dealing with rational people here, from what we can gather and the reports that we're hearing. So it wouldn't surprise you in the slightest if we wake up tomorrow and manager's gone, assistant manager, whatever the committee management team. I don't even know the titles of them, to be honest. It's just, but it wouldn't surprise you in the slightest that they're gone.
Yeah, but not at all. But I suppose I've been worried about Dundalk for a while now, and this is the reason why I have been worried about Dundalk. And I remember actually asking Stephen Kenny this about 3 years ago on another station doing an interview there, talking about, you know, I felt at the time when they were flying Dundalk that the team had almost gotten to a stage where they were moving beyond the club. You know, the team were at that level, you know, top level.
I remember you saying
and
this.
And the club were sort of struggling. And so they said, at what point does it get where you're kind of gone beyond everything? Yeah. Like, you know, and the whole point I was bringing up was like, Stephen, he's not going to hang around forever. Mm. So this is the point. Dundalk have done nothing, as far as I can see, with regards to the stadium. With all them, and they've earned an awful lot of money in the last 6-7 years. An awful lot. You're talking the guts of, what is it? Could be 12 over 10 million.
Yeah, easy.
Well, where's that money gone?
I tuned into the stream on Friday night, and it was horrendous looking at the ground. The ground's horrendous.
But the ground looks shit. It's always looked shit. It's looked terrible. It's like, you know, desperate. And I hate saying this, like, you know, because talking
but
about
it's the truth.
That, but it is the truth. It has always looked off. Not just the pitch, lads. Everything. The whole ground looks terrible. And you're always going to get to a point where you're going to start to struggle to convince players to go there. Now, I think they've. And it could be happening now because I'm not seeing too much from the new players that have really gone in there, like, you know. But it's if Dundalk have nothing to show from all the money they've earned, in my opinion, it'll be their worst of all the things. I mean, people are constantly having to go with shells and whatever. We tried it. Ollieborne tried to get a new stadium, and that was certainly something that he was trying to do. Oh, that was his master plan, believe it or not. That was the thing, and he went to his deathbed trying to get shells, move them out of Tolka and get them. At least he was trying. But from what I can see with this Peak Six crowd,
no appetite.
It just seem to be a pure investment group. I don't really know what it is they're thinking they're going to get out of it all. Maybe they're going to just sell up in a year or so. And by the way, if they did sell, they probably would make a few bob because of the earnings.
And there's serious discontent amongst the fans because, as you said, Stu, they've gone from here down to there. Like, it's dreadful. It's sad, really, because we love the whole Dundalk story. It'll be interesting to see what happened. I always felt last year as well, even when Vinny got off to a bad start and was struggling, there was an argument made to say Vinny knew what was going on and maybe stick with him.
He'd nearly done the treble, dude. You can't do away with that.
And we were saying that last year, saying stick with Vinny, and we were shocked the fact that he got this. Not shocked, but we were
The time was wrong. The timing of it was wrong.
But if we found out, the point I'm making, if we found out tomorrow they were gone, there's not an argument to be made to keep what's there, is there?
No. Not an argument at all. No.
There was absolutely
for me, Alan. There's no other option. They need to change the management. It's simple as that.
Get an actual manager in.
And
who everybody knows is
because
the manager.
There's no crowds at the game at the moment, right? So people can't voice their. But on you can. You don't need to be a rocket. You know, what is it? Rocket. Rocket scientist.
You need to be a scientist rocket.
You don't need to be a rocketeer. They're fuming.
Oh yeah,
they are absolutely fuming, and you can't. The Dundalk as a football club doesn't work without the crowd because it's such a regionalized. You need them.
Good point.
You need the people of the town.
Yeah,
you know, and
rolling in behind you.
Yeah, they're on the edge of a cliff.
Okay, just a quick one. Bohemians. I don't mean to be quick with Bohemians, but they've had a really poor start. I was disappointed with them, but I was delighted to see them back to winning ways because the Bohemian story again has been a good one over the last number of years. It's been a tough start for them, but a really good win. And Georgie Kelly going back to Dundalk getting a penalty, and they played a lot better as well. I was disappointed with them the week before I watched them against Pats, but they're up and running now, and hopefully they'll be looking to kick on. The last team, Finn Harps, another victory over Waterford, 2-1, keeping the run going. Champions League football, it's going to Ballybuffet, a new stadium. Ollie Horgan will be managing Ireland in a few years, and fair play to them. But a late goal by Webster, and they have kept it going. I fancied them to win actually against Waterford. It was a late goal, but they've kept it going. In a minute, Finn Harps.
Oh well, look, Foley getting the goals. You know, I mean, what's he got four from four?
Yeah,
I mean,
towards last season as well.
When you got someone putting it in the onion sack, it's especially at the start of the season. It gives you that confidence. Again, we're talking about a team that are benefiting from a good start. Confidence is starting to build in the team. I think they'll need all the points they get at the moment, Alan. I still think they're going to be, I think they'll drop to mid table and they'll end up sort of. I think they'll look back at those 10 points and say they were, you know, we really needed them.
They'll be like
the stadium thing is a great story. It's a brilliant story. Unfortunately, we don't know how long it's going to be, like, because, you know, we've seen through all that. I mean, you only have to look at the Daily Mount redevelopment. Mm. I mean,
and good news on that, John.
Dan Lambert was in here. When was Daniel in with us?
The start of
last
year.
It was months ago.
Yeah, I mean, June. We started this in June.
He was very hopeful of that 950,000 payment going ahead at that time. So look, how long it's taken. Mm. And it only went through last week, like, you know, so... Unfortunately, these are the things, you know, things move very, very slowly, especially when it comes to soccer, like, you know. But
the Finn Harp story's been great all year so far.
Yeah, I know.
Really,
now, credit to them, you know, and I doubted them as well, like, you know, but credit to them, you know, keep it going.
Well, the games this weekend, Stu, Finn Harps are playing on Saturday night, a big local derby against Sligo, so that should be a good one in the showgrounds. But before that, Waterford are playing Bohemians at home. Big game. You'd be expecting both to kick on now. We're obviously in Derry. Myself and yourself, Derry and Drogheda. Looking forward to that. Big night for Declan Devine. Big game on Saturday evening. Dundalk against St. Pat's. That could be the game that... And if St. Pat's were to go up there and win, that would be a hell of a statement from them. And Shamrock Rovers are home to Longford. The first division results, just quickly, UCD 0, Bray 0, Treaty United 1, Cove Ramblers 1, Shelburne 1, Wexford 0. They made heavy weather to start Shelburne, but it was a good win anyway, and they badly needed. Cork City 0, Athlone 1, unbelievable. Cabinteely and Galway was off because I think there was a positive case, so that'll be replayed, and hopefully that we don't hear too many more of them, but the numbers have been good recently. The fixtures: Bray and Athlone, UCD, Cabinteely, Galway, Treaty, Cork, Shelburne and Wexford Cove. Stewie, that was episode 7. Paul Morris, thanks very much. Benetti Menswear, as always, thanks a million for your sponsorship. We're in the Brandywell on Friday night.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you know what the big thing is, don't you?
Go on.
There's no bar in the hotel.
I heard that. Is that true?
There's no fucking bar in the hotel.
What drink are you bringing? Do we have to bring our own drink?
I was going to say one bottle of red wine, but probably, like, you'll probably end up drinking half, so I'll bring up two.
I'll bring you a bottle. I owe you a bottle.
People of Derry, where do you get it?
The people of Derry, will you look after us with a few beers on Friday night? We'll meet you outside the Brandywell at 10 o'clock. And you're more than welcome to join us.
None of that dodgy northern beer now, Jamie.
You're more than welcome to join us, whoever wants that, after Derry get a win. But
tenants, I don't like tenants. Don't give me any crap.
That was episode 7. Thanks a million, people. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.